Did you know that there are over 3.2 million podcasts in the world? It seems like everybody these days has a podcast. But did you also know that 90% of those podcasts fail to make it to 20 episodes? There are various reasons for these failures, but one reason is that people don't know what they're doing. Shocking, right? As it turns out, the same reason why people don't operate on themselves also applies to podcast success. You want to talk to someone who has had success launching and marketing podcasts. Somebody like Juliana Barbati. Juliana runs a podcast marketing and production agency, and their team takes care of everything for you, making this process a breeze. All their info is in the show notes. You can go to julianabarbati.com, tell them TGFB sent you, and get a discount when paying in Bitcoin. That's right. Juliana is a Bitcoiner. Her and her husband were actually Bitcoiners before they were Christians. And so it's been great for us to work with them. They basically came to us and said, hey, we'd love to help you guys, help TGFB grow. And so we'd love to kind of apply our services to you guys. So go ahead and support them. If you have a podcast you're working on or one that you'd like to start, go ahead and check them out. Now let's get to today's show. Joshua Hawthorne, welcome to the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.
What's up, Jordan? Good to be here.
Man, I was just thinking the other day, how is it possible that we haven't had Joshua on the podcast yet? And then you reminded me that we actually have recorded at least one podcast and we just didn't end up using it.
Apparently didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut. So we'll see. If you hear this, it means that it made the cut. So Joshua, for maybe those who aren't familiar with who you are and what you do, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, first, I'm a follower of Jesus, and he radically changed the trajectory of my life when I was in high school. And then secondly, I'm a dad, a husband to a wife and seven wonderful kids, ages 4 to 17. And then I've kind of finally come to peace with the reality that I'm a missionary entrepreneur, which is a euphemism for someone that's kind of schizophrenic and tries new things and keeps like knocking on new doors until something opens. And I'm like the dogs on Disney's Up that just like squirrel. And so I've experienced lots of squirrels over the years and and gone down rabbit holes and what is it? Wild goose chases and all those, whatever analogy you want to use.
Whatever, man, your idiom
game. Been my life. And I have a very patient wife that's just like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing now. Happy to come along and help out and home educate the kids. And so, yeah, that's me.
Awesome. Okay, Joshua, and now the other thing is you are one of the behind-the-scenes folks of Thank God for Bitcoin, the unofficial Thank God for Bitcoin crew. You have been a huge help to me and encouragement and lots of different things over the years. So yeah, actually, the other thing that we didn't talk about is that you were actually the impetus for the very first Thank God for Bitcoin conference, which then turned into TGFB Media. So I basically have you to thank for having a job. So thank you again, Joshua. I appreciate
Well, I appreciate you writing me back into the history.
That's right,
Jordan.
That's right.
There was a little bit of revisionist history going on.
Correct.
I had to pull up the email receipts to remind some folks that, hey, remember this?
Yeah, revisionist history, no Gladwell. I had forgotten that was you who instigated this whole thing. So,
This is going to be huge, Jordan. The history really matters because,
that's right.
Like, there's going to be a day when they're writing books about
exactly
the history of TGFB.
Of course. Yeah, you don't want to be like that Eduardo guy from Facebook, right? That's what you're trying to avoid, right?
No, seriously, I really don't care. I'm happy to give you a hard time,
yes,
because it's funny. But yeah, just happy to be along for the ride and contribute any way that I can.
Yep. Well, again, very grateful for you. You can see Joshua. We'll start off with this. You can see Joshua at TGFB 24 in Nashville. Go ahead, go over to tgfb.com/conference. Grab your tickets and see Joshua, John Moody, just a bunch of other guys who are going to be in Nashville. C.R. Wiley again, a bunch of pastors, a bunch of Bitcoin voices who are going to be talking about, again, what money is, why it matters, just the different ways in which economics touches our lives. And so, again, we're going to be doing a focus on Christian economics, casting a broad Christian vision of economics. And then day two, we're going to be going into more depth about Bitcoin. So if you, again, are interested in these things and want to hear more and see some of these speakers that you've met, we're going to still be announcing more speakers over the next few months here. There's one that we're saving, but it's going to be a bigger name. So we're hoping to announce those soon. Grab your tickets. Ticket prices go up on May 1st. So go do that. Again, there's plenty of promo codes that are out there that you can find to give you even a discount once the price goes up.
Well, just so you know, Jordan, I mean, by promoing me as a speaker, you've just officially sold a ticket to my mom and probably no one else.
Based. Let's go. We want Oshawa's mom. I mean, you've got some siblings and some, you know, extended family. Come on, extended Hawthorne family. Come on down to Nashville. All right, well, let's do this. This is the reason why we're talking today. We could talk to you about a bunch of stuff. We could talk about parenting. We could talk to you about pastoring. We could talk to you about Hawaii. We could talk to you about a bunch of different things. You're, you know, working with refugees. We could talk to you about a bunch of stuff. What we want to talk to you today, Oshawa, about is the fact that you are on the board of a small Christian foundation, and you guys, not even just accept Bitcoin, you guys hold Bitcoin on your balance sheet. The thing I would love to start is just kind of hearing, what is this organization? What do they do? And how on earth did you convince them to hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet?
Well, happy to give you a little bit of the history of that. And then, yeah, be helpful however I can to your listeners, because it's served us very well over the last few years. So the history, I was serving on the leadership team of formerly large historic church in our city. And the leadership team, along with that, the congregation, made the difficult decision to have a strategic closure of the church and then to steward the real estate assets from the church and invest it back into church planting and just kingdom impact within our city. And so we closed the church. There was a smaller church plant team that was sent out from that church. And then I was tasked with the job of starting a new nonprofit and setting up that board structure and that, like, you called it a foundation. It's not technically a foundation, but very similar to that idea, where we set up the organization that then when the property of that church sold, we received a large donation, and that donation then funded an endowment-like structure. And then that from those that investment portfolio, we would then invest in granting to church planting, and we call them just kingdom entrepreneurs, folks starting new ventures that have kingdom impact in our city. And particularly, kind of, how do you say, well, I live in Portland, Oregon. And so there's been a lot of work done in like the majority culture hipster world. If you've seen Portlandia, people are like, we have to move to Portland to reach those Portlandia people. And really, I mean, not everyone, but some of them are just here for the good microbrew and coffee and hipster vibe. And so we said, hey, you know what? The hipsters have had enough, or have had a lot of people reaching out to them. Let's do a non-hipster fund. Let's fund works in the hood. Let's fund works that are reaching refugees, that are doing community development and renewal in more neglected spaces in our city. And so that was the vision. And I was tasked then with setting up a board of directors, getting our 501c3. And then when we received this donation, we had to go through this whole process that a nonprofit will go through in writing up the investment policy statement that then governs your investment strategy for your investment portfolio, hiring a wealth manager, and then entrusting that wealth manager to then do your actual like picking of in investments. And so that's the standard process that you need to go through. And this would have been in 2021 when we're going through this process. And I had gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole in 2020 and into 2021. And so I had been doing my research and thinking through things. And I'd already had a background in kind of like a armchair value investor, and actually side funded a lot of my ministry work through doing value investing. And so kind of already having that lens of seeing the difference between market price and value, and trying to find those inefficiencies where the market is pricing an asset or a security different than what I think the actual value is. I used that lens to make sense of Bitcoin. I said, wow, okay, this is the value proposition of this scarce asset is significantly greater than what the market is currently pricing it at. And so I began both personal investing, but then as I was one of the fiduciaries and helping to steward these funds for this nonprofit, my job was to create that investment committee where we interviewed different wealth managers, and as well as to write up this investment policy statement. And so within that committee, I put together a proposal, and then we brought on this wealth manager who from the beginning, one of our questions in interviewing wealth managers was, what do you think about Bitcoin? What is your investment thesis of it? And are you comfortable doing a portion of like a prudent investment within Bitcoin? And because there's like prudent investor laws for nonprofits, and you can't just be foolish with your money. And so we found a wealth manager that was very qualified, was less expensive than some of the other candidates, and was open to Bitcoin. And so we're like, okay, this is great. And so then we worked with that wealth manager and with our investment committee. And I essentially gave a presentation where I argued using historical data. And this is before a lot of the great tools that have come out today. So there's a great tool called the Nakamoto Portfolio. And it's a whole website where you can backtest all of your allocations within traditional investments and then add different portions of Bitcoin and different rebalance strategies. And it spits out, hey, here's where your Sharpe ratio, here's where like your volatility is, here's what this does to your returns, and you can get all that. None of that was available when I was going through this. So I had to dig a little deeper and did some of my own research and then gathered in some other research from some other groups that have done similar backtesting on Bitcoin's effect on a portfolio. And so I argued for a 6% allocation. And our wealth manager, who's more within the traditional camp, who would argue for, hey, you set your asset class, like your diversification, and then you rebalance if it gets out of whack, and you keep that percentage-wise as you go through time. And so he wanted us to entirely rebalance. So we bought 6% of Bitcoin, then we'd have to, if it went up, we'd have to sell down back to that percentage. If it went down, we could buy up to it. And I kind of debated with him and said, hey, what if we did a portion that was held with no rebalancing and a portion that was rebalanced? And he thought that was reasonable. And our investment committee thought that was reasonable. And so that was the approach that we took. So I can keep talking, but I'm curious if you have any follow-up questions.
Yeah. So can you describe just what those different proportions looked like? What percentage did you guys hold indefinitely? And then what percentage did you rebalance with?
Yeah. So we just did a 3 and 3. So for a total of 6. And so as I would say, providentially, as things ended up happening, 2021 into 22 was like the worst year in a generation for a stock bond portfolio. So horrible performance on our standard investments. Now, we stayed largely in cash. So we didn't go like all into the market right away. So we didn't suffer as much as we would have if we had immediately converted all into bonds and stocks. But all that to say, traditional investments were still doing very, very poor during that time. And then we did that 6% Bitcoin allocation over a period of several months. But still, we were doing it in a very hot market. So it was near the top. So we're talking between 50K and 66K per Bitcoin. And so that was not the best time to enter the Bitcoin market. But because we had this rebalanced portion of our investments, and because so much of our other investments had stayed in cash equivalents, it was very easy then in going into 22 and 23, right? Particularly 22, when you had this Bitcoin bear market and it went down to 17,000. And so we then rebalanced back up. So our holdings lost about half of their value. And what that meant is now our allocation was no longer 3%. It was now 1.5% to the rest of our portfolio.
So how did that go? when you convinced the board that, hey, guys, this is a great idea. This is going to be great. This is going to be very profitable. It's going to be fantastic. And then several months later, you're down 50%. How did those conversations go?
Yeah. So with a nonprofit board, like we're getting financial reports from our investments and our balance sheet and our bookkeeping, right? But we're getting those monthly, but then quarterly, we report that to the board. And it is the job of fiduciaries, right? To look at those investments and to be willing to rethink them as necessary. And this is where I would say the value investor hat really comes in. Because if you bought an investment and you thought it was a prudent investment at $60,000, it is a twice as prudent investment if you buy it at $30,000.
Correct.
Now, you do have to relook at it. You got to say, well, what are my assumptions and my value conclusions? Were they wrong when I bought at 60? Right? So the price of 30 or the price of 17, right, forces you to go back to the homework that you did when you made a value assessment at 60. And it's important to do that. But if you've done your homework on the front side and you have a conviction that's not based on market sentiment or FOMO, right?
Yeah.
But is based on the actual value kind of metrics of this investment, well, the asset is on sale. Like, yes, I bought it at 60. Now it's on sale at 20.
Yeah.
Like, I get three times as much when I spend my money on this asset. And because it's a long term, like, this is an endowment. So our time horizon on an investment return, and this is particularly works well for our wealth manager, who we're paying a fee to get us a return. And he went through the worst year also in 60-40 portfolios. So he's reminding us, hey, guys, this is a 10-year time horizon for this expected return on this endowment portfolio. So you have to have a long time horizon. You have to know have done your homework on the front side, know the value proposition of what you're buying. So yes, I'm not going to say there wasn't like some board members who were newer entering into the market, who didn't understand the value proposition, who in a board meeting when we have our wealth manager on the Zoom call, and they're like, hey, should we rethink this Bitcoin investment? Because look at these negative numbers, right? And he very wisely said, well, when you choose an investment strategy, it's not wise to pull out halfway through it.
Yep.
This would be the wrong time to sell your Bitcoin.
Correct. Don't doubt in the dark the decision you made in the light. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We had both a sympathetic wealth manager who could say, hey, yeah, I recognize like you took on some risk in making this decision, but you set a plan, you got to finish it. And then as I worked with him, I just said, okay, hey, help me do the math. So we're down X amount on our Bitcoin. How much more should I buy? And he's like, well, how about this much more? And I'm like, cool, we'll do that. So then we did that when it didn't need to get brought back up to that 3% allocation for the rebalance portion.
So you started buying at 66. That's the...
No, we had purchases between 50 and 66. Yep.
Okay. So 66 is your top. And then you bought all the way down to 17. Where, do you know what was your bottom?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think we started buying at about 30 again.
Okay. Okay.
So we let it drop fair bit. And then we bought between 30 and 17.
Got it.
And then back up to maybe 25 or 30.
Yep. Okay. The TGFB podcast is brought to you by the TGFB 24 conference. Thank God for Bitcoin 2024 is happening July 24th and 25th in Nashville. This conference brings together some of the best minds in the church, the academy, and in Bitcoin to explore the biblical foundations and daily consequences of how money affects the incentives and outcomes of the world we live in. The name of the conference this year is Render to God, Stewardship, Dominion, and the Economics of Glory. We figured that an election year was the perfect time to examine the relationship between God, government, and money. We'll dive deep into what the Bible has to say about what money is, the role it plays in society, and why the principles governing money creation have such a huge and yet underappreciated effect on every aspect of our world. I'll be speaking alongside pastors and respected Christian figures like C.R. Wiley, Thomas Terry, Eric Hirschman, Glenn Sunshine, and many more. Tickets are limited, so use promo code TGFB24 to save 10% today before prices increase. You can also, for a limited time, if you would like to bring your wife with you, we would love for you to do that. We would love husbands to be able to bring their wives, and so we are offering 80% off tickets for wives who want to accompany their husbands. So that means you can get two tickets today for $300 by using promo code COUPLE at checkout at tgfb.com/store. Go ahead, run over and do that. We'd love to have husbands and wives together to talk about these very important topics. This is a one-of-a-kind community experience at the intersection of theology, technology, ethics, finance, and economics. We hope to see you there. Okay, back to the show. At what point did you then break even? I mean, how long was it? Because again, Bitcoin's still very low, you know, relative to where you when you started, probably half of what it was when you started. I remember you telling me that you were back in the black at some point.
Yeah. So I can't give an exact number our total cost basis. But I can say this. So as we purchased going back up, and now from my most recent report, we're sitting at like 15% Bitcoin. And our total return on our portfolio with the traditional assets doing very poorly, and I'm going to say that, almost being flat basically over a three-year period, I think we're up 16% from our account balance 1 year ago.
That's your whole account. Your whole account is up 16%.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So
okay.
We have an endowment. It's not an endowment structure, but our whole like diversified investment portfolio was up 16% total.
Yeah.
And our Bitcoin has moved from 6% to 15% of our portfolio. And I would argue that our returns, that 16% return, belongs about 90%+ to our Bitcoin gains. So we'd be sitting in a very sad place if we didn't have that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sad is one word. I mean, if you're an organization that had a smaller endowment or, you know, that was in a different position, this could be difference between life and death. I mean, we've spoken with nonprofit organizations, you know, again, who are in different positions and who are trying to figure out how do we keep our heads above water. And so, again, in your case, that's not the case. But I think broadly, this is something that more and more missions organizations and foundations and educational institutions need to seriously consider. And this is the danger, right? Is to act like whatever the average return is for the last 100 years of the S&P, as if that's somehow like, you know, we're gonna retrofit that back and just, you know, this is how things have always been since the beginning. We always get this, you know, it's just like, that's a dangerous place to be in. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. So how has board sentiment shifted over time? How do people feel about Bitcoin now? Are they fully on board or they're just like waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Yeah. So it helps as an entrepreneur in more the social and sector and ministry world. I was able to help build out that board. And I was able to educate that board. And so we have more sophisticated people like that are like venture funded entrepreneurs that are very tech forward. And then we have less sophisticated people. And so I think we have a high level of trust. And so I'm able to work with the more sophisticated kind of tech and tech forward kind of investment-minded people to help work through and educate the rest of the board. It really helps having a wealth manager that is sympathetic to things. But where we're currently at is we actually have the opposite problem. So now our investment policy statement says we need to sell our Bitcoin. We need to rebalance a portion of it back down. And so the question is, what is the strategy for doing that? And so a lot has changed in the market in the last 3 years. And so I'm trying to recruit our other members to our investment committee. And I want to get some more voices, particularly that have history and understanding of Bitcoin alongside traditional markets, to help us adjust our IPS to think through a more strategic rebalancing strategy. And what I would love to see is to us be willing to increase that holding from a 6% to more, to a larger allocation. And another benefit that we have now is we have self-custodial, or actually we have a multi-signature custodial solution for our organization's Bitcoin. But now that there's the Bitcoin ETFs, our wealth manager can actually manage rebalancing and we can buy Bitcoin within our traditional portfolio. So when we did this, there was a number of extra hoops that we had to go through, because in order to be exposed to this asset, we had to actually buy it from a Bitcoin exchange, actually custody it. And so now you can just do it through the ETFs. And so what we're going to be exploring is, can we increase the percentage that we're going to HODL, right, which is the term for holding long term? And then can we perhaps increase the amount we rebalance also? But can we do the rebalancing under our wealth manager and just let him do it with the ETFs so that I don't have to think about it and it just runs automatically, and it could happen quarterly, or we could do it semi-annually, however we want to do it. But he could just take care of that. And basically what that serves as is just, I would say, a profit flywheel that just, it's just like installing a turbo within the engine of your endowment, where, yeah, it's this highly volatile, less correlated asset that's going to have a run up and then a run down. And if you're rebalancing quarterly in that, you're going to sell it down, right, as it's shooting up. And that's just going to throw more profit into your traditional assets. And then that thing's going to drop like a ton of bricks during a bear market or during some corrections. And then all of a sudden you're going to feed up a little bit into that. And then again, it's going to shoot up and then you're going to sell it off. And so it's just this little thing that just supercharges and adds a little extra alpha. You can, whatever the right term, it's just a little more value into that portfolio. And then as the Bitcoin kind of bull who would be like, oh, we should hold it. Like, that's fine, but it's serving a different purpose, right?
Yeah.
Its purpose is with that endowment is funding ministry. And so constantly turning it into cash works. That's okay. And that serves that good purpose. Now, on the other side, the HODL side, we're exploring Bitcoin granting also. So we could get into that if you want.
Yeah. We'll get there.
Okay.
But yeah, okay. So again, this is part of the issue, right? Part of the things that you're facing is, like, again, if this thing is supposed to have a 10-year time horizon, you guys, you're having to try to, you know, have a 10-year time horizon when you're looking at these things. And so you're trying to pick up, all right, what's our best grasp on the trajectory of Bitcoin, the broader financial world, but just a lot more things that you're looking at when you have that longer time horizon. And so that would be a tricky thing, especially, you know, again, you mentioned that the world is different now. The Bitcoin world is different now. You have these ETFs that are buying gazillions of dollars, technical term, worth of Bitcoin. That does seem like it would affect the case for Bitcoin, the investor case, and it would affect the, you know, your willingness to you know, the percentage. I do think this is something that I know that this is something that blew my mind, was just how even that discussion and the Overton window for acceptable percentages for things like nonprofit organizations to put in Bitcoin. I remember 3 years ago when Paul Tudor Jones was saying that he had 5% of his portfolio in Bitcoin, and that blew people's minds. But then we have Stephen Lebka, who, you know, works with Swan and got invited to a BlackRock event a couple months ago, and they had their quant get up there and tell this group of more conservative investors that the percentage that they recommended for people to hold was 28%. And so, like, as somebody who's invested in Bitcoin, and like, I personally have, you know, a higher percentage than that, and I understand it and, you know, would advocate for it. It just is crazy to me to hear BlackRock telling people that this is normal now. This is normal. Like, to think about investing that percentage, that high of a percentage in Bitcoin, just as much as that tells you about Bitcoin, it tells you about the broader moment that we're in terms of just the uncertainty around so many different things. Again, it's a similar situation to which I found myself in when I first got interested in Bitcoin, which was, I was sitting here, it was 2019. I didn't know anything about investing. And the one thing that I knew was you buy low and sell high. And I'm starting to, you know, I'm like, all right, what do I invest in? We had this, you know, basically the nonprofit equivalent of a 401k. And I'm like, what do I invest in? I'm looking at everything's at all-time highs. I'm like, what do you do? What do you do when everything's at all-time highs? And so, like, bonds and stuff, I theoretically, or like what people were doing, but now bonds are getting killed. And so I think this is a real question and a real struggle that people are having. And so it's just the way that the world is changing is forcing them to come to grips and consider doing things that even a few years ago would have sounded insane, such as putting 28% of your portfolio into Bitcoin.
Yeah. Even as you think about the hurdle rate of inflation. So in calculating returns for an endowment, or like the personal equivalent is your retirement account, right? Yeah. How much do you need in there to pull off enough for your living expenses?
Explain hurdle rate. Yeah. Explain what that term means.
Yeah. So within our IPS,
What's an IPS?
Investment policy statement, okay. Right? So our wealth manager is supposed to get us in like a return of inflation plus, I think, 6%. And the idea is you draw 4%-ish. And so I know, I guess it's like 8%, because you have a 2% inflation. And so you need an extra return of at least 2% to keep up the value of that principal. And then if you're drawing 4, so yeah, I guess it's a 6% return. If you're drawing 4, your value is going up 2%, but that is just to counteract inflation. And so you have a steady state value within your principal of your account. But if you just look at honest numbers about inflation, I think it's a psyop, where I just saw recent reports where the narrative of, oh yeah, inflation is going to return to 2%. It's just not. Like, it's going to be at least 3%. It could be higher. Yep. And so now you have a new hurdle rate, but then you even have, like, these are like the propaganda numbers, yep, right? That 2 to 3% inflation, like, those aren't, that's not the Big Mac inflation rate, yep, right? Where I saw like a recent picture on Twitter of, like, here's the Big Mac. It used to be 50 cents and it was this size. And yeah, now it's like 40% smaller and it's $8. And so you can do just simple calculations based on the actual market prices of the labor and the supplies that go into creating a Big Mac. And you realize, oh shoot, that's not 2%. They've been lying to us. And so the actual cost of doing ministry, your hurdle rate, if you're honest, is significantly more. And so then you have to assume or just kind of rest on this, on the belief that what has been before will continue to be. And it's this like long upward trod bull market within stocks and bonds.
Correct.
And that has, if you look at the charts, keeps up just with money, like M2 money supply, money production. And you're like, well, you know what? What if the future is different than the past?
Yeah.
What if that like consistent gain that counteracts not just the lied fudge number of 2%, but actually, right, counteracts the actual inflation of 12 to 15%,
correct,
which is your stock market return. So in other words, you're just flat. But what if something shifts and the system breaks and you no longer get market returns that equal the shadow inflation number? You might get returns that beat the like propaganda number of 3%, but if you can no longer get that hurdle rate of the shadow number, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You've got to find something else.
Exactly. And this is another thing on this front too, is if you're using this money to fund ministry, you're not using this money to fund food giveaways. You know, where these, you know, the CPI numbers are going to be more comparable. Like you're actually, if you're trying to actually fund ministry of like building projects or buying buildings overseas or buying buildings there in the city, whatever you're like, if you're doing that kind of work, your hurdle rate is actually way higher because the rate of inflation is way higher. And so this is, especially if you're doing anything with property, I mean, or real estate, the rate of inflation in those places is crazy.
So even just paying pastors and missionaries, you have to deal with this hurdle rate of inflation. And you can just on one side just say, oh, well, here's the rate, 2 or 3%. But if you look at the charts of cost of living versus wages, we keep getting poorer and poorer. And so if you want to pay your pastors or your missionaries and not have them keep getting more poor, you have to be willing to give them raises based on more of this like shadow number of inflation, which is the actual one, closer to maybe 10 or 15%.
Yeah. And then again, part of this thing that's so insidious, right, is like now you're having to factor for all these different things other than just the reality of the work that you're doing. You're having to try to factor in, and you as an organization are having to try to, you know, make more money than you were making before in order to pay your, in order to compensate and pay your people well. And so again, this is what I saw in Uruguay that, you know, got me started on and going down this rabbit hole, you know, years ago now, was just seeing the writing on the wall and just seeing like how, you know, this is absolutely what happens. And again, when you're looking at it over just the span of a couple years, like it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, right? You're like, oh, okay, a few percentage. But over the course, if you extend that out over 4 or 5 years or 10, 15 years, I mean, you get to the point where, you know, this is our experience, is that you have churches that can't afford buildings. You have churches that can't, they can barely afford to rent, and they're in this perpetual renting thing. You have, again, just people where they keep getting paid less and less as their kids are getting older and older and, you know, requiring more and more expenses. And they're having to take on additional responsibilities, additional jobs that are taking away their attention from their kids at this, you know, pivotal point in their life. And so this is, it has this devastating effect on families and individuals, but then by extension on societies, cultures, churches, all these kinds of things. And so this is something, again, I think this is a really big deal. I think it's something that churches, you know, need to take seriously and need to start talking. And that's part of why we're doing this, you know, doing this podcast right now. Another thing, so we had mentioned earlier granting and giving Bitcoin grants. I want you to kind of talk a little bit about that, Oshawa, and, you know, what you guys have experienced and seen and, you know, what your thoughts are with that.
So our organization, one of our ministry programs is microgrants. And so we have a full granting process that we go through, and we help fund new church plants, outreach ministries, organizations, various things. So as we're thinking through, hey, how do we rebalance some of this Bitcoin, and do we have to sell it and offload some of it? And so what I brought to my board, and we're taking our first little step in this direction, but I hope that we can grow in it, is to begin to sell some of this Bitcoin that we now have, quote unquote, too much of, but not just to sell it and then purchase fiat assets, but to purchase ministry kingdom impact globally. And what that looks like is granting it to support kingdom ventures and ministries globally. And so granting is something, right? There's certain processes that you go through as a nonprofit. And so we've already develop those systems and structures. But we have this other project we've been working on, and we did two workshop events overseas, one in El Salvador and one in near Nairobi, Kenya, where we bring together missionaries and we bring together experts in the Bitcoin industry, and we develop ministry ideas. Essentially, you could say Bitcoin solutions to complex ministry problems. And it might be anything from like an educational curriculum. It might be a fundraising model. It could even be a tech or ministry startup that is gonna be organized around solving a problem using Bitcoin. And so in March, we were in Kenya, and coming out of that, now we have these ideas that we want to help fund. And so we have a budget for giving micro grants to these different ministry projects. But if you're educating people on Bitcoin, you're developing projects and ideas that are going to utilize Bitcoin to solve a problem, which might be a cross-border payment to a missionary that fiat currency doesn't function for, or it might be a community development project in a community that is suffering from hyperinflation. And this, with financial literacy, this helps them store and protect their value against monetary debasement, right? So this is the actual project you're working on. Why would you use fiat rails and fiat money to try to wire money, and then when they're going to be using Bitcoin? Like, why not use the very asset that is good being used on the ground in the global south? Why not use that same asset to send the value to them? And in fact, this came up when we were in Kenya. There was a need to get money to a well-established mission organization in Nigeria. Now, there's OFAC requirements, right? You got to be able to know, okay, I'm not supporting terrorism. And so there's important compliance things to go through. But here, we know this recipient is a Christian, well-established organization. They're not on the OFAC list, right? This is fine to send them money. We go to our American bank. Hi, I want to send money to this ministry in Nigeria. Sorry, we don't wire money to Nigeria. Like, it's for your own good, or whatever their reason is why they won't send money to a Christian ministry in Nigeria. Our U.S. bank wouldn't do it. Okay, so what do you do? What? Cash in a backpack and fly to Nigeria, right? Send it to another neighboring country and then put cash in a backpack and cross the border. Find another way.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, there's a QR code, and you download an open source software for free, and you copy and paste a Bitcoin address, and we paste that into our app and click send, and then 10 minutes later, it's there, right? Like a significant amount of value, US dollars in the thousands of dollars. The money's right there in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, what a solution. And we didn't have to ask permission from our bank that's for our own good, protecting us from supporting a ministry in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And then you're not dealing with the government exchange rate, which tends to be a lie to the actual exchange rate.
Correct.
You actually get the honest exchange rate, because the Bitcoin market is an open and fair market. And it's just a simple use case where, wow, if we want to support a Nigerian program, we need to use Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it fixes that problem, not just for them on the ground with the ministry, but it fixes the problem for us as a U.S. entity trying to send value to support a ministry in an area that is difficult to send money to.
Yeah. And again, we could say a lot on this front, right? Like, I mean, there's different situations. Like, we know we have a friend who's in a country in the Middle East. And again, that's sanctioned, and like he's able to get Bitcoin in ways that he's not able to get US dollars. And so this is why Christians are so ripe for something like Bitcoin, is because they genuinely, like, we care about and have been commissioned to do global work. We've been commissioned to care about and to invest in work all over the world. You don't have the excuse of just saying, all right, well, things are hard, you know, we're just not going to go. Like, we don't have that, you know, ability to just do that. Like, we've been commissioned to go, and Bitcoin is a tool that helps, you know, do that in ways that existing systems don't. It allows you to do it much more efficiently than other things do. And so, again, I think that the Overton window is moving. I think that, you know, just again, Bitcoin being talked about, they always say that from the first time you hear about Jesus to when you actually become a Christian, I don't know where this stat came from. I don't know how they're what's their methodology. This seems so fraught to me, but the statistically it's like 7 times. When they ask people how many times, and they say 7 times.
7 times 7.
Exactly. 70 some. Times 7 or something. With Bitcoin maybe it's 140 times. I don't know what it is, but again, you have to start somewhere, and I think that Bitcoin's being in the conversation, it's been in the conversation and continues to be in the conversation in spite of the acts of bad dudes like scam bankrupt fraud and his cronies. Again, Bitcoin is out there. People are continuing to use it. The value proposition, even just as a store of value, is continuing to grow in the clown world we live in. I think that people are increasingly ripe for the conversation. And again, I'm hopeful that use cases like granting and like, you know, using Bitcoin in its existing form and using it for the properties that it was created to have that make it better money and that make it digital money for a digital age. I think that, again, part of this is just it's a matter of time. It's a matter of, you know, helping broadly older people reckon with some of the technological challenges and social, you know, social acceptability of, you know, thinking about and using Bitcoin. So again, I think these things are going to happen. I think the thing that we're both passionate about is them happening on a quick enough time horizon to enable churches in the United States and organizations based in the United States to move into Bitcoin while they still have purchasing power that's not been eaten away by inflation and debasement. That's the thing. I literally think about it every day. I think about it every day. You know, there's people, again, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. The people doing the most important work in the world are, with every passing day, able to accomplish less and less with that money that's been sacrificed and given and entrusted to them. Any other things? I think we can kind of come to an end here. Is there any other things that you want to add before we end this? Feel free to talk to the listeners, tell the listeners where they can find you. I know we're going to have some other announcements that are going to be coming closer to the conference and at the conference. So if you want to hear some revolutionary things that Asha is going to be talking about in Nashville, please go grab your tickets right now and join us there. But for right now, Asha, is there anything else you want to mention?
Well, just I'd love to collaborate with anyone that's interested in this topic and the overlap of global mission work and development work, as well as Bitcoin as a technology, as a network. You can find me on X at iAhsh, IAHSH. And then also we have a link tree site up that just shares some of the resources that we've been working on that perhaps if you want to put in the show notes or something, yep, people can check those out.
Happy to do that. Asha, again, grateful for you. Again, we'll talk soon. Again, for the audience, thank you guys for listening to another episode of Thank God for Bitcoin podcast. Again, we'll be back soon. And in the meantime, yeah, thank God for Bitcoin. We're grateful for you, grateful for Bitcoin. Go out and honor the Lord and love your neighbor. We'll talk soon. Our mission at TGFB is to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. We do this through podcasts, books, consulting services, and live events. We love giving away as much of our resources as possible, but we do have real overhead costs. And there are a number of easy ways that you can help us keep the lights on to continue our mission. First, if you're a Bitcoiner, you can listen to the podcast on the Fountain app and stream us sats in real time as you listen to the podcast. Every contribution makes a difference, no matter how small. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TGFB to receive a number of special benefits available only to our Patreon supporters. If you find these conversations valuable, you can also help spread the word by sharing this episode, subscribing on YouTube, and leaving reviews on Apple and Spotify. Leaving us good reviews goes a long way toward ensuring that the algorithmic powers that be look favorably on our humble endeavors. And finally, engage with us on social media. Join the conversation so that we can build a strong community united around faith, freedom, and sound money. We mentioned the TGFB 24 conference on July 24th and 25th in Nashville. You can go grab your tickets at tgfb.com/store. And finally, go check out julianabarbati.com if you have questions about how to start or better your own podcast. We're grateful for your support, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.